Thank you for having me. It is an honor and a privilege to lead you in prayer today. Let us pray. Holy One, author of life, you have created us to be compassionate, loving, generous, trustworthy, and faithful. In this time of crises and uncertainty, we are tempted to give in to fear and despair. Remind us that when we trust in you, we can see that in the midst of fear, you create confidence. In the midst of despair, you offer hope. In the midst of greed, you give rise to generosity. In the midst of poverty, you bestow richness of life. In the midst of injustice, you restore justice. And in the midst of turmoil, you bring about peace. In all creation, there is none like you, you who have created us to give of ourselves and to serve others. Bless your servants who are gathered here today. Bless their work. Bless their rest. Bless their relationships. Bless their hope. With humility and gratitude, we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic
for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Metzl, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olsen G, Olsen M, Ortman, Pappas, Parasol, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. How far does he want to go? First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file herewith returned, Senate file 162, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House file number 56, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Okay, the next order of business is first reading of House Bill. There's one printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports of committee. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pending pertaining to appointments.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. So you have to waive the layover? Mr. Senator Pogemiller, there's another motion to lay on the table.
Mr. President.
That's the Metzen from the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs.
Yeah, I move to lay those on the table.
On the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business, second reading of Senate bills. There are a few printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business, second reading of House bills. There's one printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. There are a number of authors' motions today. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. They are printed on today's agenda. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's one motion to be read at the desk. Senator Anderson, did you wish to make a motion? It's on your desk there.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 1232 be withdrawn from the Committee on Taxes and be re-referred to the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs. This is my bill, and you, the chair, has requested this.
Okay, on the motion by Senator Anderson, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. There are two resolutions printed on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be referred to the Rules Committee. What? And then he has to do something?
Okay. Senator Pogemiller introduces Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6, Senate Concurrent Resolution adopting permanent joint rules of the Senate and House of Representatives.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6.
Senator Pogemiller.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6 is the permanent joint rules. And I thought what I would do is lay that on the table, and then we will come back after the Regents Convention and process it, hopefully.
Had to make that a motion. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I think I am going to move to lay the concurrent number 6 on the table, and I think we will not take it up until Thursday.
Okay. On the motion to lay. Lay it on the table and print it in a journal. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Without objection, remaining under motions, we'll take up introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Page 3, there's a change. 1257 will be sent to the State and Local Government Committee. Page 7, 1297 to the State and Local Government's Operations Committee. Page 10, there's two changes. Senate File 1322 to Finance. 1325 to the Environmental Natural Resources. And the last one will be printed on page 11, Senate File 1334 to the Finance Committee. Without objection. I think so. Wait a minute. Just to make clear, on page 7, I'm not sure if we did that. Senate File 1289 to Judiciary, 1293 to Finance, and 1297 to State and Local Government Operations Committee. I believe that gets them all. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. Now what? Remaining, without objection, remaining on motions, there's one bill on the calendar. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 401, a bill for an act relating to health, modifying the definition of doula services, et cetera.
Further discussion on Senate File 401. Secretary will take the roll. Beep. Secretary will take the roll. The Yeah, I was sure she didn't. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Repeat. 62 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, did we do both the consent and the calendar?
We didn't do the consent calendar. Would you like to?
I'd move that under motions that we take up the consent calendar.
On the motion to take up the consent calendar, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Carlson. Who is it, Carlson? Senator Carlson. We're on the consent calendar. There's one bill on the... Senator Carlson.
Mr. President.
Chairman. President, you're right. Yeah, President, yeah.
Mr. President.
You got me confused. When this committee
do arise, I move.
Okay, it's Monday. Explain the bill. Of course, it could be Thursday. Senator Carlson, just explain the bill.
Mr. President, Senate File 237 is a bill for an act relating to state government, which adds a fallen firefighters Memorial Day for the first Sunday in October, which matches the national legislation.
Discussion and on the third reading.
Senate File 237, a bill for an act relating to state government designating the first Sunday in October as Minnesota Fallen Firefighters Memorial Day.
Secretary will take the roll. So you want to come back and do that? All senators having voted Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and it's title agreed to. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, I think we're gonna recess to go to the House for the Regents Joint Convention. If that goes fairly quickly, then we would have till 3 o'clock to discuss joint rules. So let's see if we can get done with the House and then come back, because committee meetings don't start till 3 o'clock. And we'll just play it by ear and see how that goes. But if we could have an hour on joint rules today, that would be great. We have a fairly busy day on the floor on Thursday. So, Mr. President, I'd move to recess to the call of the chair, and that would be immediately after the joint convention is finished.
On the motion to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in
order. The roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to move that Senate concurrent resolution number 6 be taken from the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, thank you. Members, this is the permanent joint rules of the House and the Senate. As members know, we've had difficulty in the last few years getting an agreement between the House and the Senate on joint rules. And I think we have a set of changes that both bodies can be comfortable with. Things move slowly in the legislative process. So if you would look at the concurrent resolution that came out of the Rules Committee last week, you will see that the first change is on page 5, and it says that it makes clear that constitutional amendments should not be embedded in other bills, that they should stand alone and be implemented separately. That's lines 5.3 to 5.6. A bill containing a constitutional amendment may only contain the statutory language and changes necessary to conduct the constitutional election and implement the amendment. I think that's a good change. On page 6, there is a change that hopefully will help the budgeting process. Years ago, the executive branch used to typically present their budget and present the language to implement their budget simultaneously when they came before the legislature. There's been some slippage on that over the last 15 or 20 years, and it's not been a partisan issue. It's just that the executive branch has not gotten language for the bills to implement their budget to us, sometimes for months after the budget was introduced. This language will not affect this year's cycle, but it says that that all bills necessary to implement the governor's budget submitted by state agencies or departments must be introduced within 15 calendar days after the governor's budget is submitted. This should allow the committees to get to work more quickly on the details of the budget. Again, I don't believe this change would affect this year's cycle because we're past that point, but it would be a way in the future to get the detailed language to the legislature quicker. Page 7, there's a new provision that says the chair shall rotate between the Senate and the House of Representatives at least every calendar day for conference committees. There has been a problem in some years where either the House or the Senate chair of a conference committee chooses not to meet and they hold on to the gavel sometimes for as long as a week. And this would just say that gavel changes every day and therefore one body could not hold up a conference committee on its own. On bottom of page 7, there's some language that says that dealing on lines 7.28 and 7.29, with modern technology, the copies of conference committee reports are able to be put on electronically displayed very quickly, and so this just this language just moves both written and electronic copies of reports shall be placed on desks of the House and the Senate or delivered electronically. Then page 9, the changes with regards to election of regents. These changes put the joint House-Senate rules in conformance with the statute that we are operating under, and I don't think there's anything very dramatic there other than the process under which candidates will be dealt with for regents will be dealt with in committee. And it has the, and again, this just brings it in conformance to where the statute is now. And so we know this year we dealt with the way the statute is. It's a smaller group. It's not all members of all education committees. It's the Higher Education Committee. And we know that that committee now operates with a majority, just like a conference committee, you have to have a majority of both the House and the Senate before someone is nominated by the committee. Those are the major changes, and again, that change in the joint rules really will not be effective this year. Mr. President, these are modest changes. We took testimony, but I think these are ones that the House and the Senate can agree on this year. I would stand for questions.
We're discussing Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Pogemiller yield to a question?
He will yield. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, on the first change having to deal with constitutional amendments, I wonder, would you think that the transportation bill that passed a few years ago that contained that constitutional amendment in it, I know, would you think that that bill, as an omnibus bill with a constitutional amendment in it, under this provision, would be subject to a realistic challenge, or would that not? Is that not your intent with this change,
Mr.
Senator Pogemiller?
Senator Rest, a bill like that would be out of order on the House and Senate floors, and I do not think it would rise to a constitutional issue because the House and the Senate make their own rules as they go along.
But
and so if the House...
A challenge to the rules.
It would certainly be a challenge to the rules, yes.
So,
And I believe that particular amendment would have been... That bill would have been ruled out of order. That amendment could not have gone that way.
And so, Mr. President and Senator Pogemiller, this amendment to our joint rules is an attempt to curb the appetite of the legislature to put constitutional amendments inside of omnibus bills, whether they be transportation bills or tax bills, and that constitutional amendments with their specific statutory language move on their own.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, yes, Senator Rest. I think the general feeling is that those are constitutional amendments are a pretty serious matter, and they should be dealt with individually on their own.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, and the committee. I think that's a great change. Thank you.
Okay, we're Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6. Any further discussion? Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I have an amendment. I don't know if it's ready yet, however.
There are no amendments at the desk.
Mr. President, apparently it's being prepared, so if we could just continue the discussion and see how far we get here. But I don't intend on moving this till people's amendments are ready. So if there were
any
other questions.
Any new discussion on resolution number 6?
Perhaps Senator Marty could discuss his amendment.
I think that would be in order. I think is that all right? We'll listen to the discussion from Senator Marty, even before the amendment is not here. I think that's all right. Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment to the joint rules. I've tried similar versions of this over the years. It's dealing with our open meeting laws. For local governments, we require everything to be open to the public. And here in the 1970s, when people came in and sunshine laws, when my party took control of the legislature in 1972, they passed laws to open up committees. Until that time, my understanding is a lot of committees were closed to the public. You have the committee members there, the staff, and you might have a lobbyist or somebody who was invited in to present to the bill. And I think that was the wrong way to do business. I think public business ought to be done in public. And so our predecessors 30-some years ago came in and said that public business ought to be done in the open. At that time, my understanding is for a number of years, actual conference committee negotiations occurred in public. And it's a matter of convenience at times, and but sometimes we get in habits where we slip more and more towards being protective of information and doing more things in private. This amendment would restore it the way it was in the early 70s, where conference committee negotiations, not explaining bills, not stating your position on the issues, but when you're actually going back and forth and negotiating on provisions, it would be open to the public. And the other half of the amendment deals with negotiations between the houses and between the governor and legislators. Any negotiations, again, it's not explaining or stating positions or anything of that sort, but when there are contentious issues where you are debating and negotiating on either budget targets or bills between the governor and leadership, or leadership in the House and the Senate, or any negotiations between the two houses and so on would be open to the public. And I think the argument is the same as it is for other committees. If it's important, if we think it's important that our committees be open to the public, because we think it's important the public business be done in public, the same argument should go for some of the most important issues we deal with, the budget, overall budget targets, and the final negotiations of conference committees. I think all of that ought to be open to the public. If we believe in the open meeting law, if we believe what we do for local governments is right, we ought to put ourselves under the same rules as that. So I'd urge your support for this. I'm not sure if the amendment's ready yet, but I'm happy to take questions or discuss it.
Why don't we, if you care to discuss this with Senator Marty or Senator Pogamiller?
Mr. President, members, Senator Marty did have this amendment before that we will see soon, before the Rules Committee. It was given consideration by the Rules Committee. First, I want to point out that on page 6.30, we already have in the joint rules, all conference committees shall be open to the public. So the first point is that conference committees are open to the public. And it's simply not true that they're not open to the public. What Senator Marty's language does is tries to interpret other conversations and meetings between legislators and executive branches. And I think the Rules Committee did give consideration to that and felt that he was in an area that is difficult to regulate and that it's pretty hard to prevent individual legislators from visiting with each other or negotiating with each other. That's what people do, and sometimes they run into each other in the hallways and they negotiate. So I think the spirit of what Senator Marty is suggesting is one that we encourage all members to do, which is to maintain as much transparency and openness in their legislative deliberations as possible. But it seems fairly challenging to better a rule that says all conference committees shall be open to the public.
Senator Corrine.
Thank you. Would the majority leader yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Cory.
Senator Pogamiller, Mr. President, Senator Pogamiller, could you give us a hypothetical? So when what this would do is, like, let's say we get down to the end of session and the majority leader and maybe some other members are negotiating with the administration, does this mean that you couldn't negotiate behind closed doors? It would all have to be public. Can you give me a hypothetical? Or actually, Senator Marty, could you give me a hypothetical? I guess I don't really understand where you're going with this.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, Senator Coring, yes, this would make those negotiations open to the public. If you recall, last year there were long meetings between leadership in the legislature and the governor for, it seemed like, weeks on end. Maybe it wasn't that long. It just seemed that way. And I know the majority leader in the Senate complained several times about the governor not being eager to have these open to the public. And at that time, legislative leadership was very interested in opening them up. But other times it happens different way. Maybe House leadership or somebody else wants them closed. If we have it in the rules, they'll be open. I think it's more appropriate. Again, if something's important to do in public, the routine committee business, the routine hearings, then it seems to me when the final decisions, the most important decisions, the ones that deal with the overall budget and the overall policy, that those ought to be in public too. And the one thing I wanted to, when Senator Pogamiller pointed out the rule on page 6, line 30, that all conference committees are open to the public. Yes, they are. They've always been since the early 70s. At that time, however, negotiations happened in the open conference committee. Very quickly, people learned that you can negotiate on the side. I've been in some of the budget conference committees, I'm sure you may have been too, where we actually negotiate in private and then reenact, like we're really negotiating in public. That somebody will say, well, I'll offer this if the Senate would offer that, and you go back and forth, well, we won't accept that, but we'd be willing to do this, when it's all been pre-agreed to. I mean, I just think that that's kind of not the way we want to do business. Realistically, conference committee formal meetings are required to be open to the public, but some of the most important decisions are made behind closed doors. It's the public's business. I think it ought to be done in public.
Mr. President.
Senator Cory.
Okay. So then another question to Senator Marty. So then I guess it wouldn't matter which conference committee it is. Let's just say hypothetically it's the bonding committee. Does that mean that the chair of the Senate bonding committee and the chair of the House bonding committee cannot meet in private? They'd have to, any time that they need to talk to each other, they'd have to meet in public. Is that what that would mean also?
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, Senator Coring, no, they could talk with each other, and the House chair could come over here and say, here's what we've got in the bill, and here's why we like this, and we like this, and the Senate chair could say, here's what we have, and here's what we like. And then they go back and talk with their conference committee members and say, here's what the House has, and here's what we have, and then they can discuss their strategy among themselves as a caucus, and then they can have a public meeting and decide what they want to do. That's the way I think the process should work. In other words, they can talk in private, but they just can't do the negotiations. The business ought to be done in public.
Senator Cory.
Mr. President, the House has just contacted us. Apparently, they are ready for us now. So I would we can come back to this, and Senator Marty's amendment will be ready by then. So,
yes.
Mr. President, I'd move to lay the concurrent resolution number 6 on the table.
On the motion, lay on the table. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Then, Mr. President, I'd move to recess to the call of the chair, and we would reconvene upon conclusion of the joint convention.
On the motion to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess. Senator Pogamiller.
I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, as Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Concurrent Resolution number 6 be taken from the table.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. President, I yield to Senator Marty.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I have the A2 amendment at the desk.
Secretary will report the Marty A2 amendment.
Senator Marty moves to amend Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6 as follows. Page 6, line 30. This is amendment A-2.
Senator Marty on the amendment.
And Mr. President, this is the amendment I described earlier. It's now at the desk. The first part of it, the first nine lines of it are to make sure that conference committee negotiations are open to the public, not just the formal meetings, but also the informal negotiations. As I explained earlier, this does not prohibit discussions. It does not prohibit presenting the bill, explaining provisions, explaining positions, but negotiations would have to be open as they were in the early 1970s. And the second provision, lines 11 on, would require meetings between leadership and the governor, or leadership between the houses to have their negotiations open to the public as well. And again, I think the arguments are very clear. We opened regular committee meetings in the early 1970s. We opened all local government meetings in the 1970s, and this would just make sure we do it for the most important business as well as the other business. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Senator Betzel, on the amendment.
Well, Mr. President, it hasn't been shown up on the screen yet, so we're going to need a minute or two to get it here so we can see it.
Get him a paper copy. Do you have a few copies there? Who needs a copy of the amendment? Okay, if you're interested in this amendment, we've got some paper, hard copies here. Senator Prentner-Solon in the back. Okay, Senator... Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to request a roll call vote on this amendment.
Okay, there'll be a roll call. Further discussion on the Marty amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. President, Senator Marty, does this mean that a chair of one committee cannot talk to the chair of another committee?
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, Senator Langseth, no, a chair can talk with another chair, can present the bill, can discuss what's in it, can explain their position on it, listen to the other side do the same, but negotiations would be, it's just the negotiation function that would not be allowed. So, in effect, the House chair and Senate chair could meet with each other, explain what's in the bill, what they care about a lot, and so on, and then the chair of each house could go back to their conferees and discuss with them, and then they could develop a strategy for what they want to negotiate, and then when it comes to negotiating, that would be the open meeting portion.
We're on the Marty Amendment. Further discussion?
Mr. President.
Secretary.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, we're still waiting for it to get posted. Let me just briefly, for members who do have a hard copy of it,
Majority Leader, there's enough copies here, they tell me, and everybody that wants one, there's enough gentlemen on the door over here, so I don't think we have to wait for
Okay, that'd be fine. Mr. President, then let me just argue. I would argue that members should vote against this amendment. I think, Senator Marty, in your response to Senator Langseth, I think that's not exactly accurate because line 1.7 and 1.8 say that explaining the provision is not negotiation unless the provision is in dispute. Well, most things that they're discussing are in dispute. That's why they're in conference committee. And so I think that the way this amendment is drafted, it would basically say that members of conference committees couldn't talk to each other unless they're in a public meeting. And I don't think that is workable. I don't think it facilitates bringing conferences to a conclusion. And I don't think that accomplishes what you're trying to accomplish.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Mr. President, when I asked for this to be drafted, I wanted to make it clear that what we do, what is covered, is the negotiations itself. And I think the in dispute is intended, that's intended to mean when we are negotiating, not when you're explaining what's in it. And Mr. President, to satisfy Senator Pogemiller's explanation, I'm going to move to strike an oral amendment to strike everything after
public
on line 1.8, everything after the word negotiation up until the period. And Mr. President, I would like to continue to do the same amendment on lines 121 and 122. After the word negotiation, put the period and then close quotes.
Can you report it?
Senator Marty moves to amend his amendment as follows. Line 1.8, delete unless the provision is in dispute, and also on lines 1.21 and 1.22, delete unless the provision is in dispute.
Is that correct, Senator Marty? Everybody understand the amendment to the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Oh, motion does not prevail. We're on the Marty Amendment. Senator Marty.
Division on that last point, please, Mr. President. This was to make it clear to address the concern Senator Pogemiller said it didn't address. It was not the way I intended the bill, the way it was presented. So I would urge you to support this as a technical amendment. Thank you.
All in favor of the Marty Amendment to the amendment, please rise.
Looks pretty clear.
Let's get him. You may be seated. Amendment does prevail. So,
Mr. President,
now we're on the amended version of the A2 Marty motion. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I would encourage members to vote against the amendment, even as amended. And this was discussed in the Rules Committee. I don't think it's workable. And you know, if an amendment like this goes on, then we're just going to be living under the same joint rules that we have now because the House will not adopt this.
Done. Discussion, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. President. We still have some members out and about. I'd like to impose a call to the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Gerlach.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the call be dispensed with and the sergeant to be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Day.
Mr. President and colleagues, I would urge a no vote. And I will tell you that in the 9.5 years that I was a minority leader through, three different governors and three different majority leaders, and at one time, spending about 19 hours in one office straight, it sounds good, and it might have an open appeal to people that are maybe outside of our process, but I can tell you that, and I'm speaking from the minority. I'm speaking from the minority now. We'd be here, and the last time around when I was talking about the 19 hours that I spent in the governor's office straight, that was when we had the $4.5 billion deficit. I mean, we, under the rules that are trying to be put in place, we'll be here until Christmas of next year before we could ever get things solved. So I would just, I would agree with the majority leader that this is something that it might seem to you to be halfway decent, but it's not workable. Just isn't workable.
Secretary Senator Marty.
Mr. President, in response to Senator Day, that same argument could be used to make it more efficient. We could just close all the committees the way it was until the 1960s. Just do everything in private. We could get things done a lot faster that way, perhaps. I don't know that this slows it down. It might. But whenever I've often heard people say, you can be more frank when you're in private. But I think that should raise some red flags, because I think we ought to be frank with our constituents, too. I don't think there's any problem with having these negotiations in public. And again, as I said, last year, Senator Pogemiller was complaining the governor wouldn't open up the meetings. Some years it may be the House doesn't want to open up the meeting. Sometimes it's the Senate. But I think they ought to be open. It's the public's business. And the same argument Senator Day used, we could use the same thing for closing down all the committees, which it was the case until the 1960s, where you couldn't go to a committee hearing like we do now unless you were invited in.
Mr. President.
Further discussion.
Mr. President.
Senator Dill.
Mr. President, members, perhaps somebody here could let me know how this is different than the open meeting law that the county boards and city council, school boards, and town boards have to adhere to. Because if they can do it, why can't we?
Further discussion on the amendment. Secretary will take the roll on the Marty Amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Pariseau, we're in the middle of a roll call.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Marty, I'm looking at the single.
We started the roll call. I think we're a little late. I didn't see you on your feet. Senate is under call.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that those not voting be excused from voting.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will close the roll. There being 24 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Senator Pogemiller, did you wish to? Any other amendments, Senator Senjum?
Mr. President, members, and particularly Senator Pogemiller, I will tell you the truth. While this was talked about in rules last week, last Friday, our caucus didn't contemplate this was going to come up until probably Thursday. We do have a couple of amendments. I'm going to ask if it might be possible if we have, say, 10 minutes, just go over this with the caucus members. We can be brief. Okay, I'm looking at the 3 o'clock. Okay.
Where are you? Not quite yet.
Yeah. Mr. President,
Senator,
after consultation and looking at a 3 o'clock timeline here for our committees to start, I've got a couple. I know Senator Roebling has one that we're waiting for, but maybe I can go through these couple of amendments and we'll just try to make them understandable. So, Mr. President, I would offer the A. What is it? The A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the Senjum A50 amendment.
Senator Senjum moves to amend Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6 as follows. Page 5, delete lines 3 to 6.
Senator Senjum, on your amendment.
Mr. President, members, this amendment simply serves to delete a new inclusion in the rules, a new proposed inclusion. The inclusion found on page 5, line 3 through 6, basically calls for a bill containing a constitutional amendment may contain the statutory language and changes necessary to conduct the constitutional election and to implement the constitutional amendment should it pass. And then it goes on to say extraneous statutory changes or additional topics may not be included in a proposed constitutional amendment. And to that I would say, Mr. President, members from the minority side, obviously in most cases the majority caucus puts together constitutional amendment proposals. And as we read this language, Mr. President, it simply seems to me, and I think to a number of other caucus members, that you may be able to change an and or an or. But beyond that, to include any other ideas into that statutory constitutionally proposed amendment is literally impossible. And I think that necessarily limits the minority from the standpoint of the inclusion of ideas. And I don't think it's in the spirit of this institution and certainly not in this spirit of the rules that we ought to operate within. So. This amendment, the A50 amendment, proposes to delete this proposed new inclusion, frankly, on the basis that I think it's limiting and it takes away, an opportunity for the minority caucus to hone in on these proposed ideas.
Discussion on the Senjum motion. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, Senator, I guess I'm trying to figure this out. So can I ask a question to Senator Senjum?
You sure can. Yeah.
So Senator, does this mean that if there is a constitutional amendment proposed that the minority can offer an amendment? Is that what you're saying?
Senator Sinjin.
Mr. President and Senator Coring, I'm believing based on this language that, Senator Coring, you could suggest that for making the amendment work better, maybe you change an and to an or, something like this. But if you wanted to make a substantive change, in other words, a major change, as for instance, if there were a gaming kind of constitutional amendment, and you wanted to add to that amendment, for instance, that this same amendment should include Racino, I don't believe under this language that kind of an amendment would be permissible. And so I think it's limiting, at least to the minority, from the standpoint of the minority caucus being able to, or for that matter, any other member, being able to bring forth ideas.
So, Mr. President, so really then what your amendment does is say that the minority or whoever wants, if they want to offer an amendment on Racino onto a constitutional amendment, they can do that under your language?
Senator Sedgum.
Mr. President and Senator Coring, no, not quite. My amendment proposes to delete something that is being proposed to be newly included in our rules. Under the newly included language, what you just described, I don't believe could happen. So if you want on into the future for a minority member, for that matter, any other member than this body, to be able to make a significant change, at least with respect to another idea, into a constitutional amendment, I don't think you can do it based on this new language. And so I'm proposing under this amendment to take that language out.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm interested in Senator Senjum's amendment. I think he has a point. The question, and maybe it would be to you, Mr. President, we have rules that deal with germaneness on bills that are brought forward, and we say if we're going to offer an amendment, it has to pass a certain test to be considered germane. It seems to me that the new rule suspends those germaneness rules and makes the ability to offer amendments very, very narrow. And I wonder if you could comment on why we would want to do that and restrict the freedom of speech of the members of this body to make amendments in any way they see fit, subject only to the germaneness rules that are already in place. Why is this necessary when we have that provision in the standing rules as and in the parliamentary rules, for that matter?
I think we're just dealing here with the this particular set of joint permanent adopting those rules. I don't believe it deals with the germaneness issue. I just don't.
Well, Mr. President, my point is that we have in the germaneness rules provisions to say that you can't offer amendments that are not germane to the bill. What this seems to be doing is, I think, exactly what Senator Senjum is saying, is that you can't offer any amendment unless it's of just a technical nature to a bill. And I think that is a severe impediment to the rights of the members of this body to bring issues forward that they want to amend to a bill, whether it's a constitutional amendment or otherwise. If this is good for constitutional amendments, maybe it should be good for all bills. I don't understand why we would want to be so restrictive of members' rights to speak and introduce ideas freely, subject only to the traditional germaneness provisions.
Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. I think the members, Senator Hahn and Senator Senjum, you're overreading what this says. When when Senator Pogemiller first explained this provision, I questioned him on it before we went into the convention and asked him, would the constitutional amendment on MVEST have been allowed in that omnibus transportation bill, because that transportation bill dealt with many, many other things other than the MVEST constitutional amendment. And he said, no, that's exactly what this language is designed to do, that we have, far from being merely germane, that we have a single subject issue with regard to constitutional amendments and any statutory any statutory supporting language. Seems to me that this is a vast improvement, Senator Hahn, over what we have now, and I don't think it pertains necessarily to germaneness as much as it does to just overall constitutional requirement in and of itself for single subject, and that when we are voting on a constitutional amendment, that issue, that important issue, not a technical amendment to some, you know, some little bill that any of us has, but that it, a constitutional issue stands on its own, either with just the question itself or with the question and the accompanying statutory language. So I would submit that far different from the constitutional amendment on MVEST that was inside of the transportation bill is the bill that we passed that had the sales tax amendment that had the accompanying statutory language setting up various councils and so on, which was totally connected to the what we were passing in the constitutional question. It's trying to make sure that we don't have constitutional questions that deal with things that would violate the single subject. And you can talk about, you know, would the transportation amendment be appropriate? We would have a rule saying the transportation amendment couldn't be in the omnibus transportation bill. An amendment that deals with requiring a supermajority to pass a tax bill, if that was in the submitted to the people as a constitutional amendment, would have to stand on its own. It couldn't be in a tax bill that cut taxes by $1 billion and having us maybe drawn into supporting an overall bill that had a constitutional amendment in it, maybe with maybe from a conference committee or maybe in a concurrence. It would say right out in front on both sides of these chambers, House and the Senate, that that would not be permitted. It would have to stand and fall on its own and not be not be in a bill with extraneous or omnibus bills.
Mr. President.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Rust. I don't disagree with the point of trying to keep constitutional amendments separate as constitutional amendments. What concerns me, I guess, is reading where we say extraneous statutory changes. How is that to be understood? In other words, if we have a constitutional amendment to do something and someone wants to offer a substantial change to the meaning of that constitutional amendment, some of us are reading this rule change and mean you can't do that because that would be an extraneous change in the proposal that is originally brought forth. So if the point is to say we don't want any constitutional amendments to be added to any other bill, then why don't we just have a rule that says that? And I think we could probably all agree on that. But the way this is worded, I think, leaves a great deal of interpretation available to whoever is going to make that interpretation to say, well, whatever change you're proposing, this constitutional amendment, we think is extraneous to the original purpose of the amendment, so therefore it's out of order by this rule. And I'm concerned about that, and I think that, and I'm not trying to speak for Senator Senjum, but I think that's the concern that we have is the way this rule is written. It doesn't really say, Senator Rust, what you have articulated, and I think most of us would agree with what you've said.
Mr. President.
Right. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I wonder, Senator Senjum and Hahn, what if on 5-5 the word extraneous, we change that to unrelated? Would that maybe deal with the concern you're... So instead of extraneous, we put unrelated.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, that may help a lot. I wasn't necessarily so much focusing on extraneous statutory changes, but the or additional topics. I think it just virtually takes the privilege away from any other member to offer any other, if you will, additional topics, which may be very closely related to the constitutional amendment. It doesn't say that couldn't be the case. So any additional topics, even related to the constitutional amendment, as I read it, may not be included in the proposed in the bill proposing a constitutional amendment. And I would suggest, as Senator Han has, that, and I also have, that this is very restrictive, and it's going to be very difficult for you, Mr. President, to rule on these kind of things. This may on surface be intending to do a good thing, but I think the language needs some more work. And that's why I'm suggesting that, at least for today, we delete it through my amendment. And if there's another way that we can make this work better and make it understandable for all, and it seems right now, if you're in the majority, you understand it. But I think from the minority perspective, you don't, because you're kind of worried about how it's going to restrict you. If we could come up with some new language, it would be generally satisfactory. I think that would be certainly preferable.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, Senator Senjum, why don't we just delete the sentence on 5.5 and 5.6 and just use the first sentence there? Maybe that would accomplish.
Mr. President.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, I think Senator Senjum has a good point about the language when that first two lines of the new rule says may only contain the statutory language and changes necessary to conduct the constitutional election. It sort of, as I read that, presumes that what's in the constitutional amendment can't be changed.
No.
Because it says it may only contain the statutory language and changes necessary to conduct the election and to implement it. So if we object to the content of the constitutional amendment and want to offer changes to that, this language would seem to say, no, you can't do that. And so I think Senator Senjum's point is a good one. There may be a good intention here, but this language doesn't seem to suffice, and it's confusing, maybe just to Senator Senjum and myself. But I think if we want to have a rule, let's make it clear so we all know what we're ruling. And this is not clear to me.
Mr. President. Mr. President, Senator, I encourage members to vote against the Senjum Amendment.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I would include members to highly support the Senjum Amendment. It's a good amendment. Let's not tie ourselves up into this ambiguity. We need our rules to be clear, and certainly ask for your support.
Right. Okay, we're on the Senjum A50 Amendment.
Mr. President, at the appropriate time, roll call.
Be a roll call. Secretary will take the roll on the A50 Senjum Amendment. Senate is under call.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that those not voting be excused from voting.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Being 18 ayes and 40 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion, Senator Senjum?
Mr. President, members, I would propose the A52 amendment.
Secretary will report the Senjum A52 amendment.
Senator Senjum now moves to amend Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6 as follows. Page 6, delete lines 3 to 7. This is A52.
Senator Senjum, on your amendment.
Once again, Mr. President, this amendment proposes to delete some newly proposed language. It's found on page 6, lines 3 through 7. The amendment is, or at least the newly proposed language suggests that all bills necessary to implement the governor's budget submitted by a state agency or department must be included within 15 days, introduced within 15 days after the governor's budget was submitted. And once again, I think a little bit here about separation of powers. I think about how do you really define a bill that is going to be implementing the governor's budget submitted by a state agency. Most of us, I've never seen, Mr. President, a bill go to that counter that has the name of a state commissioner on it. It always has a member's name on it. And it seems like if we introduce this bill, we, in effect, take a member's ability to submit a bill, albeit perhaps a state agency idea. But I think it permits or it forbids a member from doing that. So I just think this is a bad policy. We don't need this. We can get along fine in this chamber without this, again, one more restrictive piece of rules. And so I would simply urge that you accept my amendment, delete this newly proposed language. Again, how, Mr. President, you will know or anybody else will know whether a bill might that I might produce is and introduce is a piece of the governor's action or not. It may look like it, but it may in fact be my own idea. So, again, I urge the acceptance of my amendment and the rejection of this new language.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, members, the way this is written is an attempt to just speed up introduction of bills related to implementing discussions on the budget. And all this rule says is that if it doesn't happen within 15 calendar days, the bill would be sent to the Rules Committee. And presumably, if it was something that was important to deal with, the Rules Committee would say, all right, let's get that in the mix. So this is really an attempt to speed up deliberations on the budget. And as I mentioned in my opening comments, this will not affect this year's legislative session because we're beyond that date already.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And members, again, I think Senator Senjum has a reasonable complaint here about this language. If we get and typically this happens where a agency will bring a bill to a member and say, here, I'd like you to introduce this bill that has to do with the governor's budget. I've done that. Other members have done that. If I take that bill and amend it to remove one section and then submit it, does that fall under the purview of this new rule? Does it have to be the identical bill that was brought to a member by an agency before it would fall under the purview of this rule? Or if a member decides to change it slightly or eliminate pieces of it, does it still fall under the purview of this rule? I think that the idea to speed up the process is a good one, but I'd read this rule to be another way to prevent perhaps the minority from having the freedom to introduce bills in the way that they want to introduce them. If we want to speed up the process, maybe we ought to have a rule requiring the legislature to produce budget bills sooner than what we do. That might speed up the process. But I think doing this, in my view, would simply make a further impediment on the majority, or by the majority, on the minority, in limiting what we can do with introducing bills. So, members, I think we ought to support the Senjum Amendment and delete this language and leave the rule as it is.
Further discussion on the Senjum E-52 Amendment. Senator Senjum.
And I'll be brief, Mr. President. As I read this language and I think about your staff or anybody else's staff, how are they going to know if I introduce a bill on the 17th day, how reflective that is of the governor's budget? There's going to have to be a lot of judgment in there. And as Senator Hand pointed out, a subtle change, does that in fact then result in a bill having to go to Rules Committee? And if it does, who's going to read this? I suspect your staff looks at these and makes recommendations to you for referral to the appropriate committee. They're going to have to almost read these line by line at this point under this rule, I think, in order to make this this rule work accurately. Senator Hand pointed out, you know, let's speed up the legislative budget as opposed to worrying about this. Again, I'd ask for support on this amendment.
On the Senjum E-52 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion does not prevail. Further discussion, Senator Roebling, on the joint rules.
Thank you, Mr. President. In light of that failed of amendment, I have the A53 amendment.
Secretary will report the Roebling A53 amendment.
On the same premise that we're asking the governor to speed up his budget bills, I am asking the Senate and the House to speed up theirs. What this amendment would do would require that at least 14 days after the last state general fund revenue and expenditure forecast, which is really the February forecast, each the Senate and the House would come up with budget proposals for each of the major tax and appropriation bills in the Senate. And those are listed. There's 12 of those committees in the Senate and 14 in the House. And I think that this would indeed speed up the budgetary process. If we could get this moving along, we're requiring it of the governor. I think we should hold ourselves to the same account. And so I would urge members' support.
I'll report it.
Secretary will report the A53 amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 6 as follows. Page 10, after line 19, insert. This is Amendment A53.
Okay, this amendment has Senator Senjum name on it, but it's being introduced by Senator Roebling. Further discussion on the...
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I certainly appreciate the spirit of the amendment to get budget targets out sooner, Senator Roebling, and I think when we discuss the Senate rules, you're going to see attempts to do that. I think this amendment is unworkable because I don't see any way within 14 days after the forecast that the House and the Senate can agree on targets. I mean, I just don't see, they could be separate Senate targets and separate House targets, but I, regardless of who's in charge of the bodies, I don't see how they could do that. So I encourage members to vote no.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. It does not ask for joint targets. It just says that each body would have to come up with targets and budgets for each of those committees. I very deliberately broke them out for each body because I know it would be very difficult to come up with a joint one, but at least we would all know where we stood, each of us individually, and then we would know what the other body is thinking as well, and I think it would be much easier to work from there than if we don't set an early deadline and try and move the process forward quicker. And, Mr. President, I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Be a roll call. Any further discussion on the Roebling A53 amendment? Secretary will take the roll.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move those not voting be excused from voting.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There being 18 ayes, 43 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on resolution number 6. No further discussion. Secretary will take the roll. Senate's under call.
Mr. President,
Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, I move those not voting be excused from voting.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Pardon? Secretary will close the roll. There being 51 ayes, nine nays, concurrent resolution number 6 is adopted. Senator.
Mr. President, is there any other work at the desk?
We have a couple of motions to be read at the desk. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 1224 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. This is a Secretary of State's bill. It does have a few provisions relating to judiciary issues, business office, and so we need to pull out of Finance, Senate to Judiciary.
On the Betzel motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Bach. Senator Bach, do you have a motion to read? Senate File 913. Okay.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 913 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on State, Local Government Operations and Oversight. It's a land use planning bill, Mr. President, and it needs to go through one more policy committee before it goes to finance.
Okay, on the back motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Any other, are there any announcements of Senator Pogamiller?
Mr. President, members, we will, on Thursday, the plan is to take up Senator Bach's bill on federal conformity. It did get processed in the Rules Committee on Friday. Just a heads up, that includes that amendment that deals with green acres. So members who are interested in the green acres provisions might want to make sure they take a good look at the that Bach bill, 6886, or what was that bill? Some members, and also I think the hope is to, I believe Senator Bonhoff's bill on shared services was reported today. And so we hope to take that bill up on Thursday also. So with that, Mr. President.
Before the adjournment, without objection, Senator Scheid, Jungbauer, Limmer, Fischbach will be excused from today's session all day. Senator Vandeveer from 12:45 to 2:30. Senator Berglund from 3 o'clock to the end. And Senator Ellen Anderson from 2:30 to the end. Now, Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, announcements.
Oh, yes. Senator Tavassoni.
Mr. President, the Economic Development Budget Division will meet immediately following adjournment in room 107. The room is full, so members, please get there on time.
Mr. President.
Further announcements, Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate adjourn until Thursday, May 12th, 11 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn till Thursday, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.